This is Jake Applebaum at Webzine 2005, taking place in San Francisco, September
24th, 2005. So I stayed up really late last night, procrastinating. That's a really good way to get started this weekend. And I'm trying to think of how I could apply the things that I've been doing lately to something that would be relevant here, and I couldn't really come up with a lot of it. So I decided I would just talk about what caused me to do the things that I did, because no one really seems to understand why I was doing things. And many people don't know what I was doing. So basically, December of last year, I was living in San Francisco. Living in San Francisco, I was taking care of my terminally ill father, and he was a heroin junkie. So lots of people here look down on that, especially the police. So I just like to say, fuck the San Francisco Police Department. I don't know if you're with that. The SFPD is probably the most worthless cops I've ever dealt with in my life. I mean, you can get away with murder, literally. So my father was terminally ill and struggling to get a liver transplant, and he was helpful, but unfortunately it didn't work out very well. He turned to heroin again, and in doing so, he found some comfort and pushed me away from him. So I wasn't living with him anymore, taking care of him, and some junkies moved in and they poisoned him, and he died. And unfortunately, he has no social value, so there is no justice for him. And there's such a disconnect that nobody cared at all, except for some of my close friends. But aside from that, it didn't work out for him, and he lost. And there are a lot of other people in the world that are just like him, and I was really hoping that I could find them and identify with them and try to bring to light some of their plight, make it more relevant to solve the caring problem. But I don't know if I've actually succeeded in doing that, but I'm attempting to do that. So the way that he got poisoned was some junkies shot him up with warm water and did some abscesses on the back of his legs until he got bacterial meningitis, and then he died. And when I called the police, they told me to give up because he was just a fucking junkie. So that's the San Francisco Police Department's way of solving murders. And it was a real bummer, and I was really unhappy, and I felt like I was robbed, and I was really sad about that. It really ruined my day. It really ruined my life for a long time, actually. So I decided that the injustice that I felt here is certainly not, I'm not alone. Everybody here has some level of injustice in their life. They've been to places where there's lots of poor people that are sitting on the street and just walk by them. There's people that are getting blown up every day. There's all sorts of really, really awful things that are happening, and we, by being silent about it, are complying with it. And I decided that it was a good thing to get the heck out of San Francisco because the people that killed my dad were looking for me, and the police had no interest in helping me out. So, if any of you know any police officers, give them a hearty fuck you for me. Seriously. And if you get caught and arrested by the San Francisco Police Department, you must not be doing anything important. Definitely. So I basically decided to leave the country, and I went to Canada for a little while, needed to clear my head. I was pretty upset, like, this box of needles here, it's like a kit, some of the drug stuff left behind by the people that sort of squatted my dad's house, and cane, you know, things like this, you know. The police destroyed all this evidence. They decided that it didn't warrant investigating. So anyway, I decided that I would go to Canada, and I went to Canada, and while I was there, I realized that the United States has got some really interesting media filters, and I mean, I've known this for a long time, but it's especially obvious when you're actually outside of the country for a long period of time. And so I decided that I was going to fulfill a long-time promise to go to Iraq. I have a friend that I worked with at Greenpeace, and he was living there, not in the military. He's a technology officer for a Kurdish company. And so I decided that I would either go all the way into Iraq and succeed in finding someone that I could really identify with and talking with. Hope that I could somehow create some sort of change by going there. But also I went because it was, in a way, it was a form of suicide. I was willing to die. I decided that it was a really bad time for me. And so I was going to come back from Iraq whole or full of holes. And as it just so happens, I made it, unlike a lot of the people who were there, which is really too bad for them, I suppose, most of all. But so I went into Iraq. I drove from the Turkish city of Diyarbakir into Dhaka by cover of night. We drove along the border of Syria into Iraq. And then when I was there, I got to meet people and talk to people about their lives and talk to them about all of the things that they had experienced. And I found like a lot of things I could identify with. The forgotten people who were misrepresented in the media, you know, as being Hajj terrorists and Talhead and other, you know, really fucked up things that you shouldn't call a human being. But when you're trying to desensitize the public to blowing them up and killing entire families, you have to distance them from being just like you. So I went and I saw people whose entire families had been killed, people who were snipers to Saddam, people who, for all intents and purposes, were just like us. And many of them spoke better English than I do. It's amazing the amount of poverty that's there, the amount of absolute social injustice, the fact that you can walk down the street as an Iraqi civilian and you can be shot by five different types of military police and there's no recourse for your family. No one will tell you where the bodies are. No one will be able to go to jail. You have no counsel. One Iraqi put it best when he said, under Saddam we had the facade of freedom. Now we don't even have the facade. It's worse with the Americans here. And we were in Kurdistan when I heard that. There were lots of Kurds, though, that really were happy about Americans because they had a lot of racism built up inside because of the Anfal campaign, which is when Saddam Hussein actually had chemical weapons. He used them to kill Kurds. I think it was 39 times in Kurdistan. He dropped things like VX gas and sarin gas and things like that on people. And even that, when you compare that to what's happening now, less people died during the Anfal campaign than what's happened recently in the last 10 years in Iraq. But it's interesting because the Kurds look at it as a matter of almost like, I think people in California would say like karma. It's like, well, the Arabs in Baghdad are finally getting what they deserve. So they were really happy about the Americans being there because they were finally getting their independence. They were getting the ability to run their own state, basically, in Kurdistan. But a lot of the Iraqis that were not Kurds were pretty unhappy with the Americans because years without solid power or clean water will really, really mess up your ability to live. And getting shot in convoys when you're going to work, I mean, people I talk to would say, there's no way that I can know that I'm going to come home when I leave my house. Every day I kiss my wife goodbye and my children goodbye, and I say that there's a very good chance that I will not come home. And that's the reality that they're living in, and we are all participating in doing that to them. All of us, every single one of us. Even people that are marching in the streets and then shopping at the Gap, you know? So I'm not really sure of the solution, other than to say that when I went there, I had an experience that means that I can no longer discount human beings. I really care about the people that I met there. And I feel for them, and I don't know how we can solve that problem other than by revealing it. Taking the media away from the corporate image with embedded bullshit reporting, and hopefully that'll actually kick off in the near future. It's still pretty difficult, although making fake press passes and forging documentation to get through checkpoints is pretty easy. It's dangerous. It's not something you should probably attempt on your own unless you're willing to get shot. Like I said, when I went there, I didn't care. I had no concern for myself whatsoever. I went because of my own personal trauma, and I wanted to really find these people and identify with them, really understand what they were going through. So I stayed in Iraq for 2 weeks, and then I left with my friends, and we went back to Turkey. And when we were in Turkey, we had some interesting encounters with Turkish police. One of my favorites was when they had a police rally celebrating the police. Just the fucking police. Just everybody watched the police ride around on motorcycles, jump off buildings with smoke coming out of their boots, Turkish flags that look like they're something out of a World War II movie. You might be familiar with those other bad guys in World War II. Similar looking aesthetics. Pretty amazing. And we support Turkey also. They're secular, but it's interesting what secular means in the context of the near Middle East. It's not anything like most Americans are probably used to in a secular city. One of the most impressive things about all of this was that it's incredibly easy to go to Iraq. It's just really dangerous. And I would recommend all of you doing something dangerous once in your life, but I don't know if this is the right thing. I've been told that it's irresponsible to advocate putting people in positions where they could possibly die. But, you know, what good is living if you're not going to live and do something better than yourself? I don't know if I succeeded in doing that, but I sure tried to do something. I'm not really sure what I succeeded in doing other than self-aggrandizing bullshit with my photography and blogging about my opinion, which is maybe valid to some people, but totally invalid to other people. So, after I went to Iraq, I went home, and by home, I just left Iraq. I didn't really have any place to go, so I just kept traveling for a little while. I went to Vienna, and it was weird going to Vienna after being in Iraq and in Turkey, because it was strange being there, because it was like you go from this horrible war-torn place where children sprawl pictures of their parents getting shot with crayons on the wall to totally normal, kind of, you know, everyday Austrians looking at art and museums. And it's like two different worlds, like the total disconnect between the suffering of other people, just not caring at all. It's really weird. And it really disconnected me from Western society a lot. I felt really like the things that I'd seen, I couldn't really communicate to people very well. But I tried. So I decided that wouldn't be the last time that I would do something like that. And the next time I would do it, it would be something, hopefully, where I could contribute a lot more. When I was in Iraq, I was teaching people how to use Debian and giving out Nopix disks so that they wouldn't get Windows spyware. They had a lot of problems with that kind of stuff. And trying to teach them networking skills and set up some VSAT for Iraqi voting offices so that they could get online. Through my friend's company that we were doing that. But it was interesting because one of the ways that the Iraqi school system used to work with their 40-year-old books about computers, basically through rote memorization, they don't, in Iraq, in pretty much every school, they don't teach you critically, they don't teach you any critical thinking skills. They just teach you basically to memorize things, and they teach you to be a slave. And I'm not arguing that for the Americans Saddam was like bringing paradise to the Iraqis at all. I think it was pretty bad. I do think, though, what America has brought now is worse. And I know that most of the Iraqis and even some of the Kurds feel the same way. One of the things that I did when I was in Iraq, which is probably worth mentioning, is I went to the border of Iran, and that was the first time I ran into American soldiers there. And it was kind of funny, but it kind of ruined their, like, Vietnam War movie, you know, gung-ho-ness, where they're, you know, walking down the street with their M4 rifles, and all of a sudden there's, like, this guy wearing all black with wacky hair. Like, hey, everybody! How's it going, soldier? What are you doing here? Where are you from? Oh, I'm on vacation! What are you doing here? Which which is actually what I told them at the border when they asked me why I was here. I was like, oh, I'm a tourist. I'm here to see people and things and enjoy your cuisine. I hear you have excellent bioaccumulation. You know, high cancer rates. I can look forward to dying from thanks to my country's tax dollars. How's that depleted uranium? I tried to bribe the guy to stamp my passport, but he refused. It's too bad. Another thing that I did there is I contextually related to this tattoo that my close friend Katie drew for me. I met a tribe of people that are well known as being devil worshippers in the world, the Yazidi. They are supposedly older than Zoroaster, and they believe they're descended directly from Adam, and they worship a peacock by the name of Nag Talas. A very, very interesting eclectic group that can't eat lettuce and wear a certain shade of blue. Seriously. And that was another, I've had a long-standing interest in things like that, not wearing blue. And so it was interesting to meet those people. It's pretty much the first thing that I did, other than shoot an AK-47 into a minefield. But pretty much, while I was there, I realized that things are the same everywhere that you go. And I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say that. I mean, obviously we all know that. Everything, you know, there are people with cats and dogs in every place. There are people that are allergic to cats and dogs in every place. There's human beings, there are vegetarians, even in Iraq. There are even actually transgender people in Iraq, which is really interesting to me, because they had kept it under wraps the whole time Saddam was there, but they were able to actually come out once the Americans had come in. They're probably the only people in Iraq that are really 100% happy about being able to live again, but like how they would like to live. But chances are some other person will kill them other than the government, which is too bad. But that's just the reality of it. Anyway, I don't feel like I really accomplished that much in Iraq other than interviewing some people. And I don't have audio here, so I can't play back any of the interviews. But I put them all online under the Creative Commons, and they're free for anyone to use. And archive.org teamed up with me to do this, and I spent all day at the archive there yesterday uploading all my photographs from Iraq. I decided that I think being a corporate photographer is bullshit, and I don't want to make money off of these people suffering. While I do respect people like James Yonfei, war photographer, I don't know if any of you are familiar with him, but I respect him, and I think that it's totally valid that he makes money off of his photography, but I decided that it would be better if I gave it away. If there's anybody who used these things for textbooks or, you know, art projects or really anything that can help solve a caring problem for another person, it would make me really happy. It would make it worth it. I didn't sell any of these, and I wasn't interested in selling them. So I put the raw photos online as well as JPEGs, so you can make like 40-inch prints with people here. And I think that anyone who's a photographer here should do the same thing. They should give their photographs away. You can also sell them at the same time if possible. I've had a lot of offers to do that, but I think it's really the right choice to do that because I believe that the information that I have here, the pictures of people, the decrepit carnival that I went to, the amazing amount of people with guns running through checkpoints where if you're white and you have a military hat on, they just let you pass through. I mean, these things are worth letting other people know, like an Iraqi gas station, for example. Right? I mean, it's interesting because it will help people to really, really empathize with them, I think. At least that's what I've been told by people that have written me to thank me for showing them these photos. And maybe there are some people that are interested in animal rights. I'm sure there are some people here that really care about animal welfare or suicide bombers into tankers and things like that. If you take these photos and do something useful with them, I hope that you do, or someone here does. Anyway, I left Iraq, I went out into the world and did some other things. And a couple of weeks ago, I decided that it was time for me to go and do something else. I'm about to move out of the country again, but this time permanently, because I don't want to ever give tax dollars to the American government again. Not that my little protest is going to do a lot, but it'll make me sleep at least a little bit better knowing I'm indirectly contributing instead of directly. So I decided that before I went, I wanted to do something good. I wanted to improve on what I did in Iraq. I wanted to bring food, water, supplies, skills, and document And so I called Jenny Jarvin, which I'm sure many of you know her from NPR and Boing Boing and things like that. And I asked her if she knew anybody that was going to be doing anything useful with Hurricane Katrina. And she said that indeed she did. And she hooked me up with a guy named Joel Johnson, well known for Gizmodo. And we talked at length about what we wanted to do. We talked about the impact that relief workers had on both the economy and just basically the supplies, the relief effort itself. I met a lot of adventure tourists that were down there that didn't bring their own food, they didn't bring their own water, they didn't even have a vehicle or a sleeping bag or anything like that. But I don't discount the things that they did because I think that it was really useful that they took time out of their busy lives to come and actually help people. My viewpoint is that if you use a flashlight to light the way for me, I'm glad that you took the time to do that. I don't care if that's the only thing that you've done. I'm just glad that you've done that because there's so many people that don't even bring a flashlight to light the way. So I went to the Astrodome and I started doing interviews with people right on the floor for my trio, which I wanted to really pour it out and thank Tom One, but then 3 days ago it started rebooting continuously, and now I've decided it's a piece of shit. So I highly recommend if you don't buy one. Tom One, SSP, fuck you both. So bad software, and now we're going to Windows on there, Thomas. Brilliant. Excellent. You can get a virus and defective hardware. So, we were there. I talked to children who've seen their parents die. I talked to people that had just seen Bill Cosby give a nice speech about how they should vote, and they felt like totally disenfranchised. They felt abandoned. And I thought, wow, this is a great juxtaposition to the American disasters, Iraq and the South. And I met people who believed the levees were bombed. I don't know if I believe it. Some people believe it, some people don't believe it. The Army Corps bombed it once before, so there's precedents. But the interesting thing is people went on record and they actually gave their name. And it's interesting how many people discount it even though they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They weren't there, they didn't hear explosions, but they're absolutely sure it didn't happen, which is interesting. But I think it's good to be a skeptic, so I think it's also good that the people let their names, so that people can be contacted. You can find out, you can look, try and find the facts behind it. It's certainly worth asking about. I hope that all of you at least don't discount it until we have a really good explanation, maybe like a 9/11 style committee for what happened with Hurricane Katrina. Except maybe one that actually has teeth and isn't partisan and willing to just totally let everybody off the hook when they fuck up. Instead, hold them accountable for lots and lots of people dying. Lots of people die. In New Orleans, people were saying, oh, thank God, the hurricane missed New Orleans. Because it did. It totally decimated entire cities, like Bay St. Louis. Just gone. Like, you drive for hours, and all you see is cement where there used to be a house, and the body pickup crews, they work in 30-minute shifts because they can't handle working any more than that. Because they don't find bodies, they find piles. That's the level of fuck-up that our country has gotten to. And for the most part, people don't care because they're so poor and so black, I think was the quote. But as Barbara Bush said, let them eat cake. So they've got it good here, as you can see. You know, this man here, he said, the media control in the Astrodome, it's like when I was living under the USSR. When I was living in the USSR, we had a more free press. So I decided that we should hold a workshop about making fake press passes and documentation. So if anyone's with me on that, I'd like to do that. It would be really awesome. So if any of you are interested, you know, we can sit down and talk. You can also buy press passes that are specifically for people who are not a member of the press, but are totally valid press passes. I think we should make a webzine press company. It's totally legitimate, but anybody can use it. But unlike any media, it won't be worthless. And that's not a jab at any media. It's just that any media press passes really diluted their value. When you go to a checkpoint with an any media press pass, you get a gun pointed in your face. So they did something wrong. It's probably better to just make up a group, actually, with a phone number and a PO box on it. You know, make the phone number like, I don't know. An old phone freak trick is to find a number that's always busy. Find a number that's always busy, put it on your press card, make your press pass. It's against the law, and I fully advocate it because the laws are wrong. We are the media, all of us. And it's our duty to do these things. Again, no, I don't want you to go away and put yourself in danger. I had no concern for my safety when I went to Iraq, and I had a moderate amount of concern for my safety when I went to New Orleans. I knew that it was mostly skin, you know, black people looting and white people foraging, right? Which is, of course, not the case. I didn't meet a single black looter, but I did meet a couple cracker squads that wanted to kill some black people just because. And I did meet a lot of cops that would do racial profiling when you rolled through a checkpoint. If you had a person of color in your car, you would get turned away. You have a really hard time. And I decided that, I think it was on September 11th, I found a body down the road in Algiers. Algiers is right across from Mississippi in New Orleans. It's part of New Orleans, like the French Quarter and Algiers, there are different sections of the city. And I found this. I found this body. It had been sitting in the sun for over 10 days, and they refused to clean it up. And some people criticized me for not burying it, and I think that's a great example of people not knowing what the fuck they're talking about. You should have buried that body when you found it. That's what someone told me. Like, well, I'll build a crypt out of stone. Okay, check, we got some old crypts, I can break one open, bury it. And we'll get the dental records imprinted so that his family will know where he was. We'll also disturb the crime scene here, because I mean, you'll know, in Algiers there was no flooding. So when this guy, along with 18 other dead bodies in the neighborhood, were found, and he didn't have shoes on, and the bottom of his feet aren't dirty, you can pretty much assume that he either died face down from someone killing him, or he just magically died and someone took his shoes. I mean, who knows? They'll never actually investigate it because they don't care. He's so poor and so black, again, right? They don't care about it. So there's no social justice for these people either. And I felt like I was right back in Iraq. Nobody gives a fuck about these people. And people keep giving money to the Red Cross. I cannot stress this enough. Fuck the Red Cross. I saw the Red Cross one time in New Orleans. One time. Until I was about to leave. One fucking time. And they brought around food that diabetics couldn't eat, and that vegetarians couldn't eat, and people that had a low-sodium diet couldn't eat. So all these people had legs and gangrene, they were in horrible, horrible shape, they couldn't eat. They couldn't do anything. All the money went to waste. All that help never arrived. And the Red Cross, of course, did some other things that I thought were pretty bad. Like, Algiers wasn't restricted. You could go in over the highway, it was no problem. But they didn't, because they don't care about the people out there. The Demore team from FEMA, they didn't even search the houses in out here. You walk up to houses and you see a porch, the light, some broken windows, the wind would blow through the house, and you could smell just like an entire family dead. And no one even bothered to come and help them out. Not at all. Despicable. This isn't my America. This isn't the America that I want to contribute to. I'm pretty sure that if you're here, this isn't the America that you want to contribute to. It's amazing. I had to buy a first-class ticket to leave New Orleans before Rita because I decided I didn't want to get airlifted out, and I also decided I wanted to come here and see. I thought this would be better than eating survivor supplies. And I sat next to this woman on the airplane in first class who said to me, I just don't understand why these people didn't leave. I was watching television. So you're on the television. Well, who doesn't know the television? The people that stayed? Well, I got in my car and we drove out to our summer home. And it was destroyed. So we just kept driving until we could find a hotel room. It was really expensive, but we eventually got one. I don't understand why those people stayed. I just don't get it. They said they'd have buses on the street. There were no buses coming to help people out. Bullshit. The mayor, governor, Bush, you know, the FEMA?
Yeah.
The F stands for federal, right? And it also stands for fuck. Because that's exactly what everybody was. Everybody's guilty. Look how they all stand together now. You have got the mayor and the governor and God standing with Bush. And I'm not going to say that it's all Bush's fault, because it's not. It's all the people he appointed, and it's all the people that are supporting him, and it's all the people that we contribute and re-elect. And voting does count, and you should vote. But it's amazing, because the things have happened, they didn't have to happen. They're not happening in Texas right now. There's certainly some bad things that are happening in Texas, like the poor elderly people whose bus blew up. But those people didn't need to die. And they did, anyway, needlessly. And these DMARC codes, it's a great example of propaganda by FEMA. If the door's locked, they still write a zero on the door for a number of live or dead people found. So their searching isn't even that effective. So there's probably thousands of people that are dead, and you'll never know, because many of them ended up as piles instead of people, where there's nothing left of them. So one of the things that I accomplished while I was there was I brought in some technology, and we set up a media center, and a lot of the media people came. And it was pretty interesting to hear about how they couldn't get through checkpoints with their totally valid indie media press passes. Pretty funny. So we made them some documentation that they were with FEMA. Naomi Klein came down. She interviewed Malik Rahim. Malik was the man in New Orleans that basically averted a race riot, because FEMA didn't come. The Red Cross, they didn't come. Nobody came to help these people. They just all ran away. The New Orleans police was ordered to keep people. The Gretna police were ordered to keep people. That's where David Duke is from, by the way, from the Klan. Gretna, they have signs up all over that says, "Thank you, Gretna police, for keeping us safe." It's like those police officers and the rest of them would stand on bridges with guns turned to people and say, "No niggers on this side of the river." And those people fund their fucking jobs. I can't even believe that. I can't even believe that here now, in the 21st century, the century where we're supposed to have great tolerance, the century where we're supposed to be helping each other out and making the world a safer place, we have that kind of shit. It's amazing. So, we brought internet access to a medical clinic where we were serving 80 people a day. We used it for all sorts of things, medical information, volunteers keeping in touch, food not bombs, different people coming out and really doing a lot of community organizing. And Cindy Sheehan came by and showed her face, and it was sort of like a funny photo opportunity with the Dalai Lama or something. Like, "My son died in Iraq. Hi. Hi." It was very strange. It was very surreal. It was weird. I think it was just some sort of horrible nightmare, really. And eventually, I had to go. The stress really was getting to me. Seeing signs like "litters will be shot" on places that sell drinking water is pretty inhuman. It amazes me that so many people put profit before life. And seeing people carrying around automatic weapons, kind of disturbing black water, and this stuff is amazing. I've never met people that were more rude on an American city street than an automatic weapon. You think they would at least be nice when they have the power to kill you with no repercussions, but they're not. There are people like this, though, where they were driving in a personal car around giving out water, flying an American flag, having Red Cross. They just made their own documentation. Nobody knew what was going on. There's no chain of command. Nobody knew who was in charge. So anybody could really get down there. But what was really the most shocking thing in New Orleans, other than tanks and troops on the streets and 30 helicopters at any given time, even in the middle of the night, and the curfews where you get shot after dark, what was really incredibly amazing to me was that they were still trying to force a media blackout on people. I found a nursing home with 7 bodies, supposedly, according to the DMARC code. And because the people there, that was the nursing home there, the people there forced us to leave. They were very unfriendly, and they sort of, they didn't directly say that they were going to do anything bad, but it was implied that when a bunch of people with guns stand in front of your car windows, they don't want you to take photographs, they don't want you there, even though you have every right to be there. So it's interesting to see how these people are basically losing their homes. All of them are going to lose their homes when they're burning down, whether from flooding or because now that they've been evicted by the flood, the people that own the consults, other developers, and help gentrify parts of New Orleans and Slidell, and, you know, entire towns are totally gone. I mean, those people don't really own anything anymore. Not that we know which people owned it anyway. I read about a report today from the Human Rights Watch, which if you're going to give money to an organization other than the EFF or, the archive, I think that Human Rights Watch is one of them. They did a report where apparently people were locked in their jail cells during the flooding, locked with the air conditioning off, with no food, locked in cells, inside of a locked jail, well, flooded up their neck. Like grown men and women that hadn't even gone to court. People that had been arrested the day before, that had been left there by the police. That's the kind of level of major fuck-up we're talking about here. I mean, I'd like to attribute it to incompetence, but it seems like malice. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy. And it's going to keep happening, until we participate in a democracy that we sort of have, and we change it. It's up to all of us to do that. We need to go to these places, be mindful of our impact when we're there. We need to go to these places, even if it's in your own neighborhood, in the Tenderloin. We need to do that, and we need to change it. We should start here, but if you can go other places, you should go other places. If you're a photographer, you should go and take photos and give your photos away. If you're a videographer, you should do the same. You should go and make media, and you should make trouble. And you should circumvent all of the things that are preventing you from doing what you have every right to do. You should do the things that I did better. Much better. Because anybody could do that. There's nothing special about what I did other than the fact that I just did. And the people who really need help are not... These people still need help, but there are people in every community that still need help. There are people that haven't drowned in jail but still don't have their day in court. There are people that are being held under the Patriot Act. There are all sorts of horrible injustices going around. So it shouldn't be the flavor of injustice of the day that we stand up for. We should really stand up for fighting against all injustice. This is just a perfect example of the logical extension of what we're heading for. And if it happens here, the same thing will happen. So, I guess I probably don't have any time for Q&A, but if you want to ask any questions of me, I'd be willing to do that.
I think we have time for
2.
So,
right,
first of all,
Any questions? Yes.
What's your name?
Awesome. That's a really awesome thing to do. Where to next was the question. I think I'm going to probably take a break from going to places like this for a little while. It really has worn on me, and it's really worn on my relationship with my fiance in Canada. It's really, really hard to put your life at risk and justify that to someone who's worried about getting a phone call and you being shot in the face. So I'm gonna lay off for a bit, but I think the next place that I will go is the place that the corporate media is afraid to go, because they cower in their news vans everywhere, including New Orleans, because they're afraid of the black looters and the white foragers. So, also, all of the photos, I put them on links from my blog, jacob.wordpress.com. I put all the photos up from Iraq, all the video interviews from Iraq, as well as Turkey, as well as New Orleans, and as well as Houston. So, yeah, you're free to go and do whatever you like, and that'll probably give you a better perspective than why I'm pontificating out here. So, any other questions? So do you want me to explain how we did that? The question was basically, how did you self-organize? And it was all in the lead for me. That guy deserves all the credit. GQ called me and asked me who Man of the Year should be. I told him, Malik Rahim, that guy should be Man of the Year. He needs to make him. He brought the community together by asking what the community needed, not telling them what they would get. He brought the community together and he said, we're going to stand together and we're going to fix this. We're going to do it without the help of the outside government, because the outside government is not interested in helping. And he made some calls. How Joel and I ended up being the communications guys, setting up an FM pirate radio station, setting up internet access. And other people came with food, water, gasoline, all sorts of different things, clothing, medicine. And the amazing things that they were doing was because they realized that they were going to die unless they did it. So they did it. And it's interesting to see a bunch of anarchists from all over the United States come together and help a community that there's probably 10 computers in the whole neighborhood, and then to bring in more than 10 computers is double. You have more computers than ever before. And by doing that, I think that it was interesting because he was able to really, he set up the only community that was functioning. He got electricity from generators first and gave it out to his neighbors. And they really, by building the medical clinic, helped people who were going to die, people with gangrene, for example. And the reason they did it is because they assessed the community's needs and they acted on the community's needs. And that's, I mean, it's important that you realize if you do go and do something like this, you will possibly have a reaction to you being there that is not positive, people that don't appreciate you, especially if you're a white male. You have a lot of karma to pay attendance for. You'll find that pretty quickly, especially depending on your attitude. If you do go there to help, as well as to build skills, as well as to document, you'll probably be more welcome than if you just come and take photos of people and you don't talk to them like human beings and really connect with them and help them and ask them what they need. I asked most of these people about photographing them and they thanked me for photographing the dead body. The one I posted about, I said, on September 11th, we remember Americans and what America stands for. That's exactly what America was standing for. We're all standing by giving money to the Red Cross to let a body stay in the street in the sun. Even though FEMA had people that could clean up bodies, but they told them they weren't needed. Firefighters had to watch history of FEMA classes before they could go and put out fires. I mean, it's just terrible. So, anyway, if you want to know anything more about anything like this, come and ask me or read the blog. And I'm going to do a workshop hopefully tomorrow about making media credentials and things like that. So, if you guys are interested, you can do that. Thank you.